Welcome to the Forward Marketing Podcast, the podcast that covers internet marketing strategies and leadership tactics to move your business forward with your host, Joshua Jarvis. Hey, and welcome back to Forward Marketing Podcast. That's the number four, RD Marketing. And you can catch us online at forwardmarketing.com/podcast for all the show notes for all the pages. You can listen online while you're there, or you can listen to us on iTunes. As always, one of the best ways to tell us how much you enjoy the show is by simply just giving us a review on iTunes or anywhere else that you listen to this podcast. So thanks so much for listening and for your support. I love getting the emails back about whatever my episode was about or questions that you guys have. I'm so glad that this is actually how this pay-per-click episode came about. We're actually continuing on from our pay-per-click 101 episode and sort of finishing it off for all of our small business owners that really want to learn what the ins and outs of pay-per-click are. So you can listen to last week's episode where we talked about sort of the basics of pay-per-click, what it is, how to get the clicks, all of that kind of stuff. We kind of covered that in detail. Last week's episode, we covered about just the basics of the platform. Then we talked about how in Google AdWords in particular, everything is in categories. And so there's a campaign level, which is the big category. And then there's ad groupings, which is sort of subcategories. And we talked about keywords research, which is covered in episode 12 of Forward Marketing Podcast. You can go back and listen to that. If you do a search on our website, it's just keyword research or 012, episode 012. I kind of got away from using episodes, but now I wish I didn't, because it does make it a little bit easier to say, hey, check out episode, you know, whatever, then versus telling you the title of that. So that'll be in the show notes for you as well, just as a reminder to check out the keyword research tool, because you really do need, I don't think I stressed this enough in the last episode, you really do need to do it yourself. You don't want to rely on Google. And so I talked about when you start to do keyword research that there was three types of keywords. There was the exact, there was the phrase, and the broad, each one getting wider, sort of a wider in scope as you went down that particular list. Broad being that you could say you're doing, you know, Atlanta real estate, and you could get rentals, you could get homes for sale, you could get land, you could get condos and houses. Or if you had the oval, like we were using the oval coffee table example, that could produce, you know, people searching for a leather ottoman could end up on your website and you'd pay for that click. So, and then we ended up last week's episode with sort of the killer tip about negative keywords. This is to me where all the money is made, where you go in and actually eliminate searches that people are doing so that you only get the good searches. I think we all can agree that someone searching for homes for sale in Atlanta versus Atlanta real estate even is a higher quality lead. I'd be willing to pay more for that. And so I would want to remove generic based searches from that. Same thing, like I said, oval coffee table. I may want to remove the words free, discount, or trade or anything like that, so that I don't get anybody that's trying to get a discount on my luxury oval coffee tables. So now that you've gotten your keywords done, one of the things you're going to want to do is target your audience. Now, my favorite platform for this is actually Facebook. It pretty much knows almost when you pick your nose, everything else. I mean, it's one of those things that knows every, you know, Facebook knows pretty much everything about us. I'm kind of interested now that people are leaving Facebook, you know, all of that wonderful data, how can we even use it anymore if we can't market to people? So it'd be very interesting to see what the next 5 to 10 years are going to look like with Facebook as far as people leaving it. I don't know. Personally, I don't believe Facebook can change enough to keep the audience engaged in their platform. But all of that data is going to be worth, well, it's worth billions, actually. So, but audience demographics, you can actually do this in Google AdWords as well. You don't have to just, you're not limited on sort of Facebook, as you will, but you can do this on Google AdWords. You can also do it on Bing. And so the key to picking the demographics is understanding your customer. One of the examples I gave early on was that if you were, say, someone who was targeting sort of C-level, C-suite people, like say CTOs and CISOs, the information security officer,
that you would probably not go on Facebook. You probably wouldn't go to Instagram or maybe Twitter. You would probably be on, maybe you would be on Twitter, but you probably would be on something like LinkedIn. So knowing your audience is crucial, because then you can go into demographics and actually target them. Now, the most common targeting method I see people using in Google AdWords is really more like locations. And sort of, you can pick the city, you can pick a radius around the city, you can pick a zip code, you can get really, really targeted on location. You can say, I only want IPs, which is sort of like your identification number of your internet connection in a certain area. And just a word of caution on sort of location-based searches, that for instance, when I'm on the internet, it looks like I'm in a different city than I actually live in. So you may want to make sure that it's big enough to include wherever the actual location of sort of the internet connection. I don't want to get too technical on this, but if you know where that internet connection is out of, then you may want to include it, because your customers may be living right next to your business, and not be able to target them because their IP address is going to say like a city. So for instance, my IP address, like I said, is about 15 minutes away from the actual city that I live in. And so when people see me pop up on their screen, it says, you know, and they're trying to be cute with the, hey, welcome. Hey, you know, Decula visitor. And it's like, I don't live in Decula. I'm not even close to Decula, but as far as, you know, 15 minutes away. So anyway, just be careful with that. But location is great, specifically if you're targeting mobile users as well, because that one is pretty accurate. So you can do that. You can target age demographics. You can target gender, and you can get to income and language spoken. You got a bunch of different ones. On Facebook, you can actually get down to, like, you know, someone planning to move, you know, what's their relationship status and all of that. And so your mileage may vary if you're trying to get really, really targeted. But on Google in particular, I think location is worth targeting. I think that, you know, certainly language is worth targeting. I think that age could be worth targeting. And kind of leaving it at that with the Google AdWords. Like, I wouldn't want to advertise to someone I knew was a 19-year-old about homes or real estate. Yes, it's possible that a 19-year-old could buy a house, but it's not likely. The same thing goes for maybe someone that's 65. I may not want to target that person because, you know, they are less likely to want to purchase a home. They're less likely to get a loan, all that kind of thing. So just understanding your market, understanding what their needs are, that's sort of sales 101, but it's also important for you if you're going to target demographics. It's worth noting, though, there's also different types of ads inside of your ad groups. What I've been mostly focusing on right now is talking about these text ads. That's the most common kind of ad. It's the easiest one to get started with. And that's the one I would go with in the beginning. However, you can do product listing ads, which is like for my people who really resonated with the coffee table. You can actually do a product listing ad. That's the kind of ad when someone searches for Oval Coffee Table and you see this banner across the top with, say, five or so actual coffee tables with prices underneath them. That's a product listing ad. So that'd be what you would want there. They also have image ads where you just make an image. It's pretty straightforward. It's exactly what you think it is. You have to create an image. If you do that on Google, then the one nice thing is that you could, for the most part, reuse it for other ones. Although Google lets you put a lot more text on it than, say, Facebook does. And then, of course, the popular one right now is video ads. These are quite effective on something like Instagram. They're effective on Facebook. But you really need that capture. You really need to capture a wonderful thumbnail for that to get people to click on it. So you want to have a face on it or something, or maybe an offer that, you know, something that's enticing on the video to get them to click and watch the video. And then you've got to deliver on video. But there's a lot of tools out there. You can go to Fiverr for, you know, $150, have a great video ad. So, or you can contact us and we'll make one for you. But basically, you know, those are the different types. So once you've got that, you've got some different ways to, you've got some different sort of networks, if you will, to display the ad. You've got a display network, you've got the search network, and this is in Google AdWords. So, you know, you've gotten your ad groups down, you've gotten your keywords selected, you've got your demographic done, your audience, and now it's time to decide where do you want to go. Now, for me, I want people who are searching on Google for the most part. Most of my small businesses want that immediate business. But if you're on a display network, it's kind of like, it's almost like being on Facebook or being on the other sites. Sometimes you're on a website that maybe someone's reading, like Fox News, or reading an article, and then they see your ad. So they may have been in a mode of distraction or entertainment and then seen your ad. And so that's important just to know that that's what it is. Now, you may only be like, you can get really detailed on this and say, I want to be on Fox News, or I want to be on some of these, especially if you could do pay-per-click on a lot of these different places, and they would be great sources of business for you if you knew their audiences and you knew that was part of their thing. So that's a little bit more of an advanced tip than what we're really talking about today. But yes, you could. If someone was to ask me, Josh, can I advertise on Fox News? The answer is yes. Just know that, like I said, you need to know your audience on that. You need to know the strategy there, and you may end up paying more. So you can target networks. You can target Google, like I said, on Google AdWords, and you could also target devices. And so, for instance, let's say you created an ad specifically for mobile users. You wanted them to download an app. You wanted them to visit a search site, like a product listing site, like a real estate site, or something like that. Then you could target people who are using a phone. The other way is also you could target someone using desktop. So, for instance, maybe your site is not mobile ready. Then you could target someone on desktop only, so that way they don't miss, you know, they don't have a poor experience. But let's get into bidding. So once you've got all this, then you're gonna actually start bidding. Now, you could just use Google to do the bidding on that. But there's so many free tools out there. Again, go back to the keyword episode, episode 12, and you can use some of these tools. Most of these tools are actually there for you to understand what the pay-per-click options are. So it makes sense. So like if you're doing sort of search and optimization research on SEMrush, for instance, it gives you the information that says, hey, you know, you could spend all this time and energy trying to rank number one, or you could just pay $4 a click. So which would you rather have? Now, I argue on pay-per-click. Pay-per-click is like renting. You have to pay every month to get the traffic. When you stop paying, you stop playing, so to speak, and it goes away. And for some businesses, that's exactly the model they need. They need to be able to put the money in and get clients out. SEO is more like owning. You create the content, you start to get rankings, and as you move up in the rankings, you get traffic and you get customers. The downside is it takes a lot longer to do that. And then with Google changes, it could be something that, you know, Google could change something. And it's sort of like, you know, that was it, that movie Cars, you know, where they move the road over and this once vibrant city is now, you know, a ghost town because the road no longer goes through the city anymore. And so Google moves their roads over, and now these businesses don't get the traffic. So just keep that in mind. Like right now, I'm seeing a lot more blog posts than I am companies in some of my search results, which I think is very positive. But at the same time, it's something just to be, you know, understand with SEO. Whereas pay-per-click, the same thing could happen there, but it probably would be something that you would sort of see. SEO is not necessarily free, but it's something that you can work on. And if you always have... There's one thing that's been a constant with SEO, and that has been that if you do write great content and you write from the heart, you write passion, it's going to resonate with a certain audience. And that's been true since the internet was created, that good quality content has been something of a driving factor for traffic, at least throughout all the years. Yes, links matter. Yes, keyword density mattered at one point. Yes, all that stuff mattered, but we're getting to a point where it matters less and less. And so just sort of comparing, contrasting those things, I think both search and optimization and pay-per-click need to be part of your tool belt. They need to be part of what you're doing. But budget-wise, a lot of business owners may opt to do pay-per-click. They can actually spend a little bit less on pay-per-click and get business right away, and maybe, you know, save up for, you know, SEO services or something like that. So anyway, so back to bidding. Use the keyword tools, like I said, SEM Rush. There's a link on our website to that. I can put that on the show notes for you. Very simple. You know, you just type in the keywords that you're thinking about, and it spits out the average cost per click, and it's a great starting point. In fact, I think you could even bid a little bit under that to see what it is, or you could bid a little higher. Usually after the first month, and I usually, like, we tell our clients, it's going to require about a month of quote unquote experimentation for us to see what reality is in your given market. Because the more exact keywords, the more demographic information, the more like device, the more limiting you are in your search, the harder it is to see what the playing field is going to look like. So what you may pay for a click in Atlanta for a home buyer may be, you know, something different than someone, say, in California. The price ranges are different, all those sort of things. So just need to understand that with pay-per-click, there is about a month of sort of learning as you go about what works in the market. So here, once you've done your bidding, obviously your ad is gone, you know, ready and live. One of the things you're going to want to do is track it. So if you haven't set up Google Analytics, now is a really great time to do that. And they have a conversion pixel. So one of the most important steps, I think, of measuring a pay-per-click campaign, of really anything, is starting to set your goals. Now, goals are when a user visits your website, what do you want them to do? And so this episode is not about setting the goals, but I do think it's crucial. I think a business owner is foolish if they don't set their goals and they don't spend time doing that, because basically you don't know how effective your landing page is unless you set that goal up in that conversion pixel. And so you can do it just by setting the conversion pixel and say, hey, everybody that hits the thank you page, you know, they fill out the form, they hit thank you page, you could do that and you could say, okay, I know how many leads am I converted. That's the bottom, that's like the very basic level of tracking that goal. But if you go into Google Analytics, it actually walks you through the whole process. You can create entire funnels. And what I mean by funnel is that, you know, steps in the sales process. Maybe they visit a product page, maybe they visited the individual details page, maybe they clicked on add to cart, maybe they clicked and then they went from the add to cart to shopping cart, they went from shopping cart to credit card to thank you, and that's a funnel. And so you could track all of that in analytics, Google Analytics in particular, and there's other services that do that as well. And so that would be what I would do. Now, if all of that just sort of hurt your head, then, like I said, you just want that conversion pixel on the page, and you want to tell Google Analytics which page you want to count as a lead. So a lot of businesses, that's what they'll do. They'll have a form, you fill out the form, and then it takes you to a thank you page. And that's what you would track. So everybody that hits the thank you page would be considered a lead. Now, if they found it somehow, if you left it out there, you didn't block it or anything, and they found it on their own, then that would count as a conversion. It wouldn't count towards your overall budget. It just would count as a conversion. So be very careful with your thank you pages and whatnot. You want something that can track the actual pay-per-click, you know, sort of click through to closing. And maybe in another episode, we'll get into, you know, what's a good click-through rate, what's a good conversion rate, those sort of things. In some cases, they're, you know, they can be as high as 30-40%. In some cases, they can be as low as 2%. So it really depends on the industry. But you want to track this, because otherwise, all that stuff we talked about in the first episode about understanding, hey, if it's $5 a click and it takes two clicks to generate a lead, how do you know it takes two clicks to generate a lead unless you have some sort of tracking? And so that's a big part. So you've got your tracking set up. You've already bid for the ad. You've all done all this stuff. We could talk a little bit about remarketing before we get into some how to actually do the ads. But I'm going to save that for another episode, because I think that's a full episode of how to leverage remarketing. But just so that you know what it is, because you will see it if you actually do any of these steps and you go into AdWords and do it. Remarketing is where you are for a lower cost, sort of marketing to the people who have already seen your site. So they went to your site, the Google sort of knows they went to that site, and then you just sort of follow them around. And so it gives you an opportunity to create ads, kind of like branding ads or ads to drive them back to the site. So a great example of remarketing is if you've ever been to Amazon or eBay or something like that, you looked at a product, and then all of a sudden, everywhere you went, you kept seeing the same ad for the same product over and over and over again. That's remarketing. And so it's really powerful, but we'll cover that in another episode. But now I've actually teased for the last episode about some killer tips on this. And so some of these are kind of like slap your forehead. Oh, wow, really? That's it? But they are still tips nonetheless that have helped me generate a ton of business for my own business and for others. And I think these will help you as well. So you get basically one or two headlines, depending on the kind of ad that you have. And then you have two descriptions as you create a text-based ad for Google AdWords. In the headline, you're going to want to be very literal. This is, so you want to make sure that, you know, this is stuff that you may want to write down, or you may just want to save our show notes on this, but you want to make sure that you're very literal. So let's say I had an ad for homes for sale in Atlanta. My headline would read, homes for sale in Atlanta. This is why a lot of people will create very, very small keyword groupings for their ads. So they'll have homes for sale in Atlanta, and they'll have Atlanta homes for sale as their two, you know, exact match keywords, and maybe one or two variants or something. But they wouldn't do a neighborhood ad, they wouldn't do anything else because it's not specific to Atlanta. This also helps with your landing page. Your landing page, Google actually ranks your landing page as far as relevance is concerned. So if you did Atlanta homes for sale, for instance, and then you sent them to a page of a suburb, then you're not going to have the same relevancy as if you sent them to a page full of Atlanta homes. So same thing goes with our oval coffee table. If you were doing oval coffee table, it was your keyword, then your ad, your headline would be oval coffee tables. Again, it's why you would create a bunch of different ads for individual type of tables. So you can get really, really detailed on this if you want, and it's worth the effort to niche it down to be really specific. Now, the other thing you want to do is you've got your headline, oval coffee tables, maybe say for sale. Well, you want to capitalize the first letter of each word. And the reason that you want to do that is twofold. One, it's an old throwback from direct marketing and, you know, newspaper advertisements and all that. But basically, it makes it easier to read. And it's pretty much a standard now. I almost think that you could get away with doing all lowercase and people would click on it just because of the curiosity factor that that's going to be an ad like they've never seen before. But capitalizing the first letter of every word in the ad is a great way to help people read it. It makes it stand out as far as what you're saying. So your headlines can be very very literal. I've got a little note here. It says KISS, you know, keep it simple, stupid. So make the headline very straightforward what it is. If you wanted to add the word see or buy or something like that, you could. But again, keep it really, really straightforward. Your description, on the other hand, is where you want to make your pitch. This is your opportunity. You got 35 characters on each line, and this is where you want to make your pitch. You want to use, you know, words that are like unforgettable, you know, or something exclusive. So one of the ways to come up with some pitch is to think about your unique selling proposition. So let's say you did cashback offers. Let's say if you're a real estate agent, you offered cashback. You could put that in there. If you were doing some sort of take the furniture home for a day, you might put that in there. And you also could use awesome. You could use words that are sort of the ad words that you think of when you think of ads. That's where you would do that. You know, exclusive, one of a kind, those kinds of words. As you're listing out your features and sort of benefits to the audience, you want to list the benefits to the audience. The last thing you're going to do on the second line is your call to action. So it'd be, you know, visit us today, set up an appointment today, call us today, do something now, buy it now, you know, get these before they're gone, those sort of things. Finally, you have a path that you can put in, and the path is just the web address. It's the URL. I don't want to get too technical, but you can actually put something else there. So, for instance, let's say you have a website and it's somethingsomethingsomething.com/Atlanta Homes for Sale. Well, let's say you didn't want to put all that in the URL. You just wanted to put Atlanta Homes, or you wanted to do rebate homes or distressed property or, you know, exclusive homes in that line. You could put whatever you want to in there, and Google will let you do that. The key thing is there is that sometimes, like, it's not for me, I don't typically do that, because I do know there are some people who don't click on the ads, but rather copy the ad URL and type it in to go see what the website is. So, but in general, you could do that. So you want to make your pitch in that description. You want to make that, like I said, that's the element where you want to get creative. Your second line. The other thing is on your first line where we said, you know, the unforgettable experience the unforgettable furniture store with oval tables, period. What that does is it sort of opens up your ad to get a little bit more exposure if you're able to finish each sentence with a period. In fact, one of the key tips, killer tips I've written down is if you can list your benefits and list multiple ones with periods, it makes a big, big difference, because then Google will take it and format it differently sometimes. And that's the other thing to remember, is that sometimes you'll go and search the ads and they won't look exactly the way that you want them to. Just know that Google is constantly changing this stuff, which is why you need to stay on it. It's not necessarily a full-time job to do pay-per-click, but it definitely is something where it can take a portion of someone's day every single day if they're doing it right. And of course, it depends on your spending budget. So if you're only spending $100 a month, then that's it's an easy once a week sort of look at. But if you're spending $1,000 or more a month, then you really want someone looking at that, maybe even on a daily basis, depending on, like I said, again, depending on lead flow, lead cost, all of that. So your killer tips were really about the headline. Again, it's got to be all caps. What you want the user to see is exactly what they typed in. If I typed in oval coffee tables for sale, I want to see oval coffee tables for sale as my headline. If I saw best furniture outlet in Atlanta, then is that going to, am I guaranteed when I click on that link to see oval coffee tables? Well, no, I don't know what's behind that link. That's the reason why you want to be very direct and very literal on your headline. And then on the sales pitch, you'd mention the reasons why someone wants to meet with you. Save 3%. Used to be we calculate how much we saved our customers who were home buyers. And so for a while there, we were averaging, I think, 7 or 8% on home. So we could run an ad that said, save 7% on home on average. And I could put a little asterisk on it. So when they click the ad, you know, the asterisk would tell them that, you know, that's not guaranteed. But in any case, there's a lot of these, a lot of real estate agents running ads like guaranteed sales programs. So you could run a home seller ad and put that in there. Home sold guaranteed, or we buy it. That would be the perfect place to put that in that first description. The same thing with the, 30 days cash back or 30 days return policy. No haggle, no hassle return policy. You know, you'd put that in there in your pay-per-click. So hopefully these two episodes were helpful. Again, it's just an overview. The idea was to give you, you know, sort of pay-per-click 101, so that if you're walking into, if you're going to do this yourself or you want to open it up yourself, that was something that you want to do. Google is falling all over themselves to give you $100. And basically how it works is if you spend 50, you get 100 or something like that. And there's a lot of coupons out there for about $100 worth of free ad spend. So if you haven't done it before, and it's connected to your email, so you can't really cheat it unless you just create more emails and have more credit cards. But if you sign up for an account, you do get some free money. And so if you've got a small business, especially a brand new business, this is a great way to get maybe a few customers in the door, spend $50 and do that. But definitely go through the process we mentioned here, because what a lot of small businesses do is they sign up, they go ahead and take the offer, but they blow through the $150 really quick because they're running really generic ads. And that's the takeaway from these past two episodes is that if you're going to do pay-per-click, just like really anything else in business, this is why I think so many business principles are analogous, is that when you get really, really specific and get really down to the niche, that's where you start really learning how to make money on this. When you go really wide and broad, you're going to waste a lot of money on pay-per-click. And frankly, you know, that's just true for anywhere else. If you listen to our networking episode a while back, you go into a networking event and you say, hey, I'm looking for anyone who wants to buy or sell real estate, you're not going to get anyone. But if you said, I'm looking for your neighbors who are thinking of selling in the next 6 months, you're probably going to have a much better chance of getting someone. The same thing goes for any other business. The more specific you are, the more you're going to get out of, the more your opportunities you're going to get. So thanks so much for listening. I've got a great episode lined up for you next week. So the last 2 weeks we covered pay-per-click, and next week we're actually going to talk about how to select a CRM. In my research with business owners, one of the things I realized was that I could generate a ton of leads through pay-per-click and SEO, but a lot of business owners don't have a CRM or even know what one is. And if you don't have a database, then you really don't have a business. And you may not want to sell your business right now, but at some point down the road, it may be something that you want to do. And the only way you're going to do it is if you have systems and a database of customers. And so that's what we're going to talk about next week, is how to actually evaluate a CRM, what to look for, what are some things, especially if you've been on a CRM for a long time, what are some things to look for in new CRMs, and what's the most important thing a CRM can do for your business. And so that'll be next week. So thanks for tuning in. And I'll look forward to, at any time, if you want to contact me, you can at joshua@forwardmarketing.com. I'm on Twitter at JR Jarvis, and I am on, or maybe it's Jarvis Team. That's pretty bad. I don't even know what it is, but I log in. I don't look at my own username, but you can find me if you search for Joshua Jarvis pretty much anywhere, and you can connect with me all over the place. I look forward to talking to you soon, and I'll talk to you next week. All right. Bye.